This is Mouth Media Network. Amplify and connect.
Hi, I'm Melissa Shaben, and I'm founder and CEO of Virtue Labs. And what I love about beauty now is kindness. It's a little different than it used to be, but given the last few years, I think that's the most beautiful thing, the small acts of kindness.
It turns out that shaking up the hair category takes an army. A beauty industry veteran shares how she brought technology developed for battlefield trauma to hair care products to help heal the wounds in hair strands. She reveals the secrets to leading a company that's both a product and ingredient manufacturer, grabbing a trademark from a former presidential candidate, working with a human-derived active ingredient, and how the future of hair lies in growth, literally.
From New York City, you're listening to Beauty is Your Business, covering the intersection of innovation and business in the beauty industry.
Welcome, Melissa. We're so excited to have you here today. I'm April Franzino, and I'm here with Karen.
Hello.
And Abby.
Great to meet you.
Same here.
And we're so excited to get to talk about your journey, Melissa. So you have a little bit of an unusual, exciting journey that brought you to where you are with Virtue. So do you want to talk to us a little bit about that and how you got to leading this hair care brand that's pretty revolutionary in the business right now?
Sure. It's interesting because it's only been commercialized for a couple of years now, but it's actually been worked on for about 8 years. And it was a piece of technology that was developed for traumatic injury and primarily in battlefield traumatic injury. So there was a colonel in the Army in North Carolina that was also a brilliant biotissue engineer that was seeing some of the tragic effects of war and the types of injury that has happened in the last 20 years, which is much more explosive injury. And the military and medicine had gotten pretty good at triage, so really good at keeping people alive. The challenge in his mind was that the quality of life post this injury, medicine hadn't caught up to how do we, take these people who have been really blown apart? How do we give them a life that's worth living? And so he dedicated and has dedicated his life to finding devices and, therapeutic proteins and things like that that help with bone tissue, nerve regeneration, as well as printing 3D skin.
So, wow.
Yeah.
Printing 3D skin.
Yeah.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, think about the fact that 3D printing has become, it will become more and more a part of our life in a very material way and very disruptive. But if we could think second skin, if we could actually print skin and it was a human byproduct and it went on a burn, then the modeling of that burn could become materially better. So, there is a big effort to try and figure out a way to improve people's lives after trauma. And he is primarily focused in battlefield trauma because he had a 30-year veteran, but there's lots of traumatic injury that happens out there and, car crashes and things like that. So, sure. The reality is it's a big industry and it's a big opportunity to help people improve the quality of life.
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, I think the other application that I've seen is using 3D printed skin so for testing instead of using it for animal testing.
Yeah.
So there's just so many applications.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So how did you translate this into hair? How did that connection? How
you have
that
about made? 17
yes.
hours.
Yes.
Give us the highlights.
Yeah.
Highlight reel.
So look, I didn't. We built a brand here, but the technology is really the story, and that is a byproduct of brilliant scientists. But oddly, he had a young woman working in his lab, working on her PhD thesis, interning, and her parents were salon owners. And she made the correlation between what he had developed, which was a process of extracting keratin from human hair, so it behaved like a human byproduct. And she made the link between, well, if it's keratin, 90% of our hair is made up of keratin, this should help the wounds in hair. Mm-hmm. And that's how the link started. And then they got to me and the rest is history, although I can feel every hour of every day of the last 8 years.
Wow.
Incredible. That's so interesting. So once you saw this opportunity, how did you take it into the R&D process? Because that's a whole other, and we all know because we've lived that in many renditions. How did you get from the idea and the his technology into the lab, into developing, what did that even look like?
I mean, it's a great question, and because you're in the industry, you know to ask that question. It was tough because, right, biotech people don't do things in small batches. All they're doing is trying to figure out how to get to a human clinical trial, right? We have to scale. We have to get the cost out. We have to do all those things. At a point in time during this process, I was also looking at buying a gummy manufacturer out of Canada, and I was working with a process engineer out of the pharmaceutical business. And so a lot of our experience here has been luck and coincidence. And Bill is this brilliant chemical engineer and process engineer. And he figured out how to make the protein at scale, cut some of the costs out. And because we in the cosmetic industry are not GMP compliant, we have different requirements for a facility. So he was actually able to put a parallel process up that got to scale, got the costs down. When we started, you know, I remember the scientists were super proud of themselves because they told me they could make the protein for $49 a gram, and there's a half a gram in each. I was like, oh, you have a decimal point problem.
Yeah. Oh God, you mean
49 cents? I was like, that's not gonna work. But it really was finding the right people right at the right time where the challenges and the inflection points came that were impossible. And once we figured out how to make the protein, which we do ourselves, we are as well an ingredient manufacturer, which is very unusual, as you know. Mm. We then had to figure out how to make the protein, which to the cosmetic ingredients looks and feels like hair. So they were binding in formula to the protein. And so when it came out, it didn't do anything because it already had bound to the protein because it saw it as hair. So it was complicated for sure. But, you know, it's funny. We just never gave up on it. There were so many times where you just would have said, look, I can't raise any more money against this. I have no proof of principle. But we just believed at the end of the day. We saw so much, you know, in clinical trials, we just saw so much benefit, especially for people that were suffering from real, like, female pattern baldness and things like that. We saw an opportunity to really help. Mm-hmm. And so we just never gave up on it. Neither did our investors, which is sort of interesting.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
It's a long process regardless when you're innovating.
And you know hair care. I mean, you know, you slap someone's name on it. No disrespect, but it's all the same pieces of the puzzle. Just move them around. It's clean, not clean. It's a commodity item. You're cleansing your hair. That's its job. Now, you may like the smell or the packaging or whatever, but working with a full human protein was a whole different ball of wax.
Wow. So fascinating. So, I mean, you mentioned female pattern. You know, balls, it's a huge problem. I feel like people.
It's enormous.
It's massive.
Epidemic.
Like, totally. Mm-hmm. I know it strengthens a hair strand, but does it also help with, like, growth? Or, like, what are the opportunities there?
Yes. What it does is it creates a fertile scalp. So remember, in keratin, it's an anti-inflammatory. And a lot of the challenges that we have is inflammation, right? It's just challenges with aging. It's inflammation. So I'm not going to go through the pathway of going into a clinical trial to get to a true hair growth, an ANDA, a new drug. But we know that we strengthen the hair. So part of growing hair is you naturally grow it in cycles, but it doesn't survive because it's so fragile. If you think about new hairs that maybe grow around your scalp, they're peach fuzz. And as much as brushing or using a towel, they'll drop off. So we have very strong clinical evidence that we can improve the scalp fertility, we can improve the strength of the new hair, and we can do a lot with the hair that you have. So the drugs that actually really help you are very hard to use because they're really awful. And they make the little bit of hair you have look worse. So I think in the industry need to do a better job. This is an epidemic for women. It causes all sorts of challenges, self-esteem issues. My mom suffered from catastrophic alopecia when her mother died.
And it actually impacts so many people.
Oh,
yeah.
It's
like
people aren't talking about it.
Women won't talk about it.
They'll
talk about anything. They won't talk about losing their hair because it's so embarrassing.
Yeah. Mm.
So we're working really hard and expect to have a really strong position coming out of Q4 2020.
That's amazing. I mean, I also think, like, scalp care, we've had guests. Yep. It's so interesting. Like, that's not as much of the education process here. And there's a huge opportunity in the U.S. especially versus in Europe.
It's extraordinary to think we put so much gunk on our hair, and would we ever wash our face and not moisturize? Would we ever wash our face? Would we ever not exfoliate our face? And meanwhile, because the scalp is covered, we don't treat it as skin. And it is. And the healthier it is, mm-hmm. the healthier the hair is. Mm-hmm. So
it's really the perfect time to start having this conversation, to start educating in all of your years, mm-hmm. which it always takes.
Yeah.
It's finally at the point where you have a proof that it does work. And you
perfect
can really,
storm, really, for us. Yeah. Sometimes it's luck.
The right time.
Yeah.
It's all timing.
Yeah.
So you have this incredible technology that's the first of its kind. Tell us a bit about the process of taking the technology and bringing it to market, how you came up with the brand's name, the packaging, the positioning. Where do you take the little seed, and then how did you grow it into Virtue?
The name was sort of an interesting thing because it was hard. It's hard to come up with a name anymore because everybody has everything.
It's the worst.
Captured it.
It's awful.
It's the worst. I mean,
it
sounds silly, right? But everybody's
terrible.
Grabbed every URL and you end up having to fight. And we were stuck on a project name and we just couldn't get – nothing felt right. Because of the history, we have to be careful. You know, we have an obligation to where this came from. This came from the greater good. And so we can't be – you know, we can't objectify anything. And we wouldn't be here without – think about it. We wouldn't be here unless someone was harmed and someone tried to help somebody who was harmed, right? I mean, so – we went through these lists and lists and lists. And finally, we got this list from this young copywriter that we paid like $500 a day. And Virtue was on the list. And I thought, you know, when you close your eyes and you think about Virtue, it's just peaceful. You know, it's aspirational. We never really get there, but we try. We try to be virtuous. And so we went on the trademark search. And it was during the election process. And the trademark was owned by Ben Carson.
Hmm. Oh, my God.
That's so interesting.
I mean, you can't make this stuff up. Right?
Yeah.
So a pastor in L.A. had deeded the trademark to Ben Carson for fragrances. Crazy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And with all of this going on, the trademark was coming up. And nobody was doing anything. So we worked on parallel path naming. And we did all of this work around Virtue. And we thought, you know, it keeps us on the straight and narrow. We're not going to be allowed to do things that are salacious, or you have to live up to your name. You know, at least, you know, I'm older. So the brand actually, you know, the guardrails are very important to me. And, you know, it was a Friday afternoon in April, and the trademark became available at 3:00 on a Friday afternoon. And that was it.
It's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, bravo.
Yeah.
Because it's tough.
And then the packaging was just, we wanted the packaging. We first of all, Danny Kaner and Sonia Kashuk are very good friends of mine. Danny is the founder of Orbe, president, and Sonia is Sonia Kashuk. And, you know, I went to them because their aesthetic is so great. And I followed their lead, and we ended up with Brero Partners in Spade and AMP, and we put three agencies together and just sort of challenged them to come up with unique packaging. And we went hard on the tooling and, you know, all of the things that you make mistakes over, you try to take with you over the course of your career. Mm-hmm. So
the packaging it's beautiful packaging. Looks great in my shower.
Thank you. You know, you don't get everything right, but the navigation, the be able to distinguish between a shampoo and conditioner when you have soap running in your eyes and water, you know, putting it on its head so that the product runs down versus having to shake, you know, that kind of thing. So those are great things to share, though,
with our audience, especially because we're a trade podcast and people want to hear from the experts and the entrepreneur how they got there. You know?
We did a line years ago for Frederick Fekkai, and it was an anti-aging line. Packaging was identical, and the type was very beautiful and very subtle. So you'd find yourself in the shower, and you were always 50% wrong. It's like, I just put the conditioner in my hand. So, you know, it's function and form.
Now we can all be laughing when we're in the shower.
That's true.
That's funny.
It's pretty incredible.
So, when you started, you mentioned your investors and sticking through it. Did you raise from biotechnology investors and not, right? Because that's really, at the heart of the company, it's a biotech company, right?
It is. And most of the investors initially came from the best investors in the therapeutic company.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they saw a way to protect their investment in the therapeutic company and to leverage it across another application.
Right.
It started primarily, most of the investors are North Carolinian investors. Mm-hmm. So they're investing where the plant is super interesting. It's in Winston-Salem and it's a beautiful little old textile and tobacco town, gorgeous architecture, but it's lost tens of thousands of jobs over the course of the last 20 years because these industries have just collapsed and moved. So there was lots of opportunity to for inexpensive financing, and there's a big job initiative. So we were able to attract a lot of local capital that wants to see these small towns in North Carolina come back.
Wow.
That's really neat.
It's great.
Ahmed, in terms of your distribution and what your strategy was for that, how did you land on where you are?
So we started purely native, just e-commerce, because it's such a hard story to tell. And we felt like the best thing we could do would be to get as many samples in the marketplace at the lab stage as we could. So we sent 8,000 lab samples out to friends and family. We don't have that many friends and families, but we extended.
That many friends and family?
It's a lot of reach. We're Italian, so there's a lot. You know what I mean? So, but, you know, we just kept extending it. And so we had a little bit of a flywheel going in, and we really wanted to get feedback, because this is a lot to talk about. You know, when I'm able to have 45 minutes of somebody's time to tell the story, they're like, oh, I have to try that. But, you know, at the end of the day, in a commercial setting, I can't say anything different than anyone else. Better shine, more diameter, more film. Right. I mean, it's all the same. It's who's yelling the loudest. So sampling is really our greatest asset.
And so they were like your incubator.
Yes,
almost.
They really were. And so we got feedback about texture, smell. And then we were able to build the selling copy around it. So we started purely native, and that remains about 30% of our business today. Then what was happening is consumers were going into their stylists, and the stylist was saying, what are you doing in your hair? What have you done? You know, your hair is very healthy. It's very different. And so then stylists were coming into us and saying, can we buy the product? Can we sell the product? That kind of thing. And it just started to evolve organically. And so the business, you know, is getting sizable now, and it's about 30% native, 30% professional, and 30% retail.
Wow.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's fantastic. I love that.
Yeah.
That the stylists were seeing the opportunity with their clients. I mean, that's, you know, completely the reverse, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because a lot of the reviews – you'll hear people saying, someone said to me, did you cut your hair? Did you do something? Because the hair just looks healthier and better. And so it's kind of like, what did you do? You know, it's when you see someone and you're not really sure. Mm-hmm. And that's what the stylists were saying to their customers. What's going on here? That's you know, because you know someone's hair. It's like a doctor.
Yeah.
They come in and you're like, oh, what happened to you?
So is there like continuous R&D and new products and that initial base? Like, do you still leverage the community for that?
Yeah. It's interesting, unlike my 30-year history in developing product and marketing, the protein leads. Mm-hmm. So we don't know that much about her yet. You know, mm-hmm. we only know what we know. We know, and we call her because she's powerful and multitasking and complicated. So she leads us, you know. We'll discover. Someone will say to us, a stylist in Raleigh, North Carolina had the powder and she started to put it in color. This is where Color Kicks came from. And she said, there's something happening. That's and when I put the powder in, we're seeing this different, seeing that I'm coloring hair healthy. And so there's so much innovation that's possible because it's a genuine, human, fully functional protein. So the innovation pipeline is 10 years and it's accretive. So mostly what we do in the industry, right, is we expand the portfolio of SKUs.
Right.
And we really just take from Peter to pay Paul and, you know, we obsolete one thing and put a new thing in. These are accretive categories. So color, straightening, hair growth. It doesn't have to replace the existing care brand.
Right.
And that's, you know.
That's fascinating.
So I have a product innovation.
Oh, good.
You got to come up with the product that makes your hair stay the color that it's meant to be, because that is the game. I mean, right?
Yeah.
Because as you age, it really changes your world, your life, your time,
and your
finances.
Texture too.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very interesting that the study of hair is so complicated, and because we can't do that much, quite frankly, big companies don't invest enormous R&D dollars into fixing problems. I mean, big companies, big pharma companies invest in things that they think they can have a good commercial drug in. But, you know, you ask a Procter or you ask a J&J, put $100 million into developing something for that. And they say, well, I'm going to end up with a shampoo and conditioner. So it's interesting, but we're working on it.
It takes the entrepreneur.
It does.
The spirit of the entrepreneur
and then
to see it.
Right.
So then are there patents around some of the technology?
Yes, there's quite a few patents. It's got a solid patent portfolio, and it's a cost, process, method, and use, and composition of matter.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible. So at this time, we're going to take a moment to have our snack. So this is a tradition on the show where our guests bring us a snack for everyone to share. It's a great way to get to know a little bit more about them. So Melissa, tell us a little bit about what you brought to share and why.
So I, like my children, I'm a savory kind of gal. And so I like pickles. Pickles are my favorite snack because they're salty and briny and not so fattening. And you know, pickles and olives are sort of my go-to in my house. So, and I'm a New Yorker by trade and training. And I'm living in the South, and there's no good pickles in the South, so I have to buy Bubby's pickles.
Really?
Yeah.
Bubby's pickles.
Bubby's pickles.
Bubby's special.
Yeah. I can't believe there's no good pickles.
It's a good kosher, it's a good kosher pickle.
Yeah.
It's a good kosher pickle.
So we're going to take a little bit of a break right now to enjoy our snack, if you would like to. And then coming up, you'll hear Melissa talk a little bit more about her history in the industry and what she sees for the future of her brand and the hair care industry in general.
Entrepreneurista, a woman who organizes and operates a business, taking on greater than normal financial risks in order to do so.
One who has a drive, passion, and vision with an undying determination to succeed.
She is fiercely motivated, ambitious, and competitive, forging her own path to independence and success.
That's an entrepreneurista.
Through the conversations on the Entrepreneurista podcast, we want to celebrate failures, reflect on successes, and get unfiltered about what it takes to be your own boss. This is the Entrepreneurista podcast, presented by Socialfly.
It's the best business meeting you'll ever have, with must-hear real-life looks at how leading women in business are getting it done
and what it takes to build and grow a successful company. It's beyond the gram,
with no filters,
no limits, and plenty of surprises. Check out all our latest episodes at entrepreneuristapodcast.com.
So we talked a lot, Melissa, about hair care products and the industry and how it's hard to reinvent the wheel because the wheel is the same.
Right.
All the, you know, different versions of the same thing, essentially, you know, with some exceptions. So how is it that you, you know, you're sort of changing that with this brand and approaching it in a totally different way than it ever has been before?
So the interesting part for me about the technology is hair care products that we create, and I've created a lot in my lifetime too, basically coat hair for a finite amount of times to get a look, a benefit, a hold, a style. But there isn't progressive nature. You know, keratin treatments and color fade out, wash out, those kinds of things. What's happening here is because the protein is a human byproduct, it is actually repairing the hair progressively. So the keratin fits to the exact space and site of the damage. So you have a damage site, you have a crack in the hair. This is a filler to that crack. It goes right to the damage site. It stays in the damage site, and then it washes off. If it can't find a home, if the protein can't find a home, it doesn't have anywhere to live. So think of it in the context of a cut of an open wound in your skin, and it goes right to where the wound is, and then it comes off where it's not needed. So the aesthetic ingredients, the partner ingredients that are in the product, do the other heavy lifting. But the protein itself is doing the reparation, and it binds naturally to the site in the hair. So that's the difference. And it's progressive. So you'll find if you use the product and you continue to use it, now you damage your hair every day, right? You know, think about putting a 450-degree anything on your skin. What would happen? That's your blow dryer temperature. So if you continue to use the product, you continue to keep this reparation going. If you stop using it, eventually you're burning it again and there's nothing there to fill in that wound. And so, you know, we're lucky in that, you know, we have a product that actually is getting inside the follicle and doing the heavy lifting and reparation. It's repairing those strands. They come back together.
So tell us a little bit, you mentioned this too, about sourcing the protein, which is a human byproduct.
Yes.
So that's very unusual
yes.
in the industry to have an ingredient that's sourced.
And that's human drive. Scared us at first, quite frankly. You know, it was, oh my God, what are people going to think? But then, you know, when you think about the alternative, which is everything is animal byproduct, it's right. hooves and beaks and feathers, it's acid wash and high heats, and it's just exploded into amino acids. So not that amino acid is bad, but it doesn't do much. Mm-hmm. So when Luke was developing the technology, they started with, you know, barbershop sweeps and just using things that were cut off. But if you think about it, that's the deadest part of your hair, mm-hmm. right? And they didn't get enough yield of the protein in that. So they came up with the thesis, and they had known this, that virgin hair closer to the scalp would be theoretically have a better amount of keratin in it. So they went to people who make extensions and wigs, and primarily in China, which is a $6 billion business. And the parts that you can't use, which are the short parts, are the parts we need. So it's the waste. Oh. So you can't use the 1.5, 2 inches your hair grows all the time. So you have lots of short hairs in your head. And when they cut that hair and they rake it, there's a byproduct of about 1.5 inches or 2 inches. We can't process anything larger than 1.5 inches.
You're taking the scraps.
We're taking the scraps.
That's
yeah.
so interesting.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things that was fascinating to me is you talked about the community you're building. And if we think about some of the big, larger issues you're solving with a product around, you know, hair loss yeah. and, you know, all of that. Like, how do you think about your target market?
Yeah.
Because there's a clear target market for aging, but what about prevention and how are you seeing consumer behaviors change?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I probably have a lot of personal experience. My mom lost her hair catastrophically through stress about 10 years ago, and I watched the devastation of that. I think hair loss is becoming a real serious issue and an issue now as younger women are more inclined to be vocal about things. Mm-hmm. It's more top of mind, and so it's getting more attention. But ultimately, look, 6 in 10 women after the age of 35 are going to experience some form of thinning and hair loss, and it's driven by all sorts of issues, whether it's hormonal issues, stress issues, pollutants. It's just a confluence of things that are happening. And, you know, I think there's more appetite, especially if you see it genetically in your family, there's more appetite to start dealing with prevention earlier on. And so getting the health of your scalp right, getting the balance of your pH right, and being aware and not doing things to your hair. You know, with all due respect, you know, we went through these trends of not washing our hair and using a lot of dry shampoo. Well, that gunks up the follicle. You know, so I think that we go through these trends and then there's byproduct or side effects to the trends. So I think we're coming back to health of scalp and we're coming back to a real conversation on what we expect both out of the pharma industry and the beauty industry to address this issue. We expect more as women. You know, it's a serious issue. It affects confidence. It affects self-esteem. It affects lots of things, how we view ourselves. It's a serious problem. The same, you know, femcare, all those things. It's yeah. like, you know, it's time to look at us and make sure that, you know, what's on our radar is on the radars of companies that are responsible for delivering products to us.
We recently heard your exciting news about Jen Garner using your product.
Yes.
So that's a true great endorsement that yeah. you know she's
yeah,
such a
lucky.
Fantastic
yeah.
mom and actor and
businesswoman too.
Businesswoman, yeah. absolutely. So how did that happen? And tell us the story.
It was all me.
Uh-huh. Of course.
No, just kidding.
Of course it was.
Yeah. So our beautiful, wonderful, you know, super talented creative director, Adir Abagel, who Adir and I worked together at Fakai many years ago. And he's been with me right along the whole journey of this. So holding my hand and wiping my tears away when I thought we would fail. Adir and Jen have been friends when they were poor and unknown. And he introduced the product to her a couple of years ago when it came to market. And she's just been a huge fan. Mm. And I think she's the type of person who, if she believes in a product, she's comfortable getting behind it. She chooses carefully. And their relationship is one of deep, you know, a deep, long, loving friendship. And she's exactly, at least in my experience so far, which is limited, exactly what you see, just a genuine person who really wants to help get the word out when products work and do their job.
And how amazing, because she was actually a client of the product.
Right.
And buys the product, which is great too. Right. A lot of people get it for free.
Right.
And that, yeah, they get products for free.
Yes, they do.
And she really, she was a genuine, it changed her life. It gave her more time. And
that's great.
So we couldn't be more thrilled. And it's, we look forward to working with her.
Mm. It's great. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Everybody loves Jen.
Yeah.
And her hair.
Yeah.
So as you look forward into the evolution of the company, and you said your pipeline is up to 10 years in the future, can you give us a little peek at what you guys are developing or what your strategy is going to be as you grow and continue to grow?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think the care line, which is about 20-ish SKUs now, will continue. We'll fill the holes in that. We only create product where the keratin matters. We're not going to do something because it's hot if the protein doesn't fit or the protein doesn't make a material difference. You know, we are a biotech company first, and unless we can make a difference, we're not going to play. And then, you know, as we spoke about earlier, figuring out how to add value to the hair, women's hair loss category is very emotionally important to us. We also think we have a point of difference and we have something to say and can improve the quality of product and the outcome. We know we improve the benefits of hair color, the vibrancy, how long it lasts. We know clinically and through, we've got Color Kicks on the market, which was just given the Popular Science Award, one of the top 100 inventions of 2019.
Can you explain what Color Kicks is for us?
Yeah, so,
what is that?
So Color Kick is a combination of a reactive version and a non-reactive of the protein. So it's 100% natural. It's a lyophilized powder. So it gets freeze-dried and then it gets grinded and it goes directly into the hair color. It adopts to the whatever you're coloring your hair, because the color sees it as a byproduct of hair, and it fills the keratin back in. So when you color your hair, you're actually breaking the disulfide bond, right? You're snapping the hair open. That's what we do, you know, with peroxides. We break it open so that the color can go in. Yeah, of course. The porosity is terrible. You're taking all the moisture out. We actually fill the keratin back in. So it goes back in the color of your hair. So you're coloring your hair healthy.
And it makes your hair color last longer?
Yeah, last longer, be more vibrant. It's really quite phenomenal. Again, when we talked about how do you decide where you're going, that wasn't us. That was just a young colorist in Raleigh, North Carolina, who was kitchen witching and was like, oh, my God, something's really happening. And we launched the product about 9 months ago and been lauded with awards.
I always wonder about that, about the shampoo and conditioner that says four color treated hair, right? And then you just have your regular, because as you age, your color, you know, we had that conversation.
Yeah.
So how does that work with, this is a specific line within Virtue?
Well, and it's a service-based product.
Got it.
It's for the colorist.
Oh, it's for the colorist. So it's not for
every,
so no one can buy it.
Well, you know,
how did we find that person? Where are they?
We have consumers who buy the product and take it into their colorist because it's harder to get, you know, it's easy if you're, you know, it's kind of like, you know, give me this. I've got it in my hand. Put that in my color. But we're starting to get good traction in the professional salon world. And it works well with Olaplex too because they do different things.
Well, it's interesting because and kind of going back to the science-based route, if you think about pharma, you know, so much, it's like the patient now knows so much more where they ask the doctor for the prescription.
Yes.
And I wonder, knowing now that there's education
now
in this, I'm like, if I'm going to a colorist, like, are you using this or not? Like, I'd be asking for it too.
Exactly. And I probably
should. She can get you some.
Yeah, I can get it. I'll probably get killed for saying this, but I mean, you know, we lift a lot of celebrity color, and there's no way to take people from brunette to platinum without Color Kick. The hair would fall out.
Right.
I mean, there's
no
way.
No,
you know, Nicola Clark.
Adir
and Nicola took Emily Clark and Charlize Theron from blonde to brunette I mean, it was crazy, right? You can't. I mean, that hair would come off in your hands.
You know, I thought about that. Like, how do they get so dark? And then how does it get back? And
it's called a kick.
That's so interesting. But from, an education and marketing standpoint, it's interesting, like, when you have a B2B2C element and how you communicate that message. But,
it's top down, bottom up a little bit. So it's educating on the consumer on what to ask for, especially if they're looking for transformation, you know. Highlights, you need highlighting your hair, it's okay.
Right.
But if you're looking to do real transformation, if you were to go blonde,
right,
you'd be like, okay, wait a minute. now. Well, you can't
actually
lift.
Thought about yeah. that. That's
yeah.
why I'm interested.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's great. It's great.
Are you going to do it?
Yeah. Well, with color cane.
Now you are. It's a side conversation, but I'm like, it would have been fun if I wasn't still in my 20s, but with the glasses, I mean, it just looks like, I don't know. But it was. I went through a platinum phase for a while. I wanted
yeah,
like,
it's
platinum
great.
Silver.
And, it's great. And then, you know, fashion colors. Isn't it interesting now how, yeah. you know, we're not, from a color standpoint, trying to look like each other. We're trying to do our own jam, our own customized totally. Color. I think these kids are fascinating, and yes. it's great. You know?
It is. Yeah.
So as a, you know, science-based company, there's so many facets and complexity. Like, what have you learned about marketing the product? And you mentioned you started with direct-to-consumer. So in a lot of ways, you're kind of like the most modern D2C company because you built with a community. You know, it's like all the best practices. What did you learn that shapes how you market your brand and educate the consumer in some of these important areas?
I think the future is being able to really know you guys. You know, what's important to you? Where are you in your stage of life? What's your travel history? Mm-hmm. You know, because at the end of the day, the better I know the customer and the better we know customers, the more we can serve you the right things that you need. You know, the content
Absolutely.
That you need. You know, it's I don't, you know, and hair is a funny thing. Look, the reality is if I put a shot out there, if I'm very diverse and put a shot of an African-American woman with natural hair with a gorgeous, amazing afro, if I, as a 55-year-old Caucasian woman, look at it, I'm going to go, that's beautiful, but that product isn't for me, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's just the realities of life, you know? So I think figuring out, and the protein, by the way, doesn't see demographic at all. It only sees damage. So it really is completely agnostic.
The but that's great.
Yeah, breakage, it doesn't see it. The partner ingredients are geared for certain conditions mm-hmm. and types of hair, but the protein just sees damage, whatever it is. So I really think developing, you know, this isn't novel, but really deep relationships mm-hmm. with customers and making sure that they're happy and they have the things that they need when they need them. You know, if you're flying to Arizona or Florida and you're spending, you know, 4 months in Florida, guess what? Your hair's going to change and you're going to need different things. So I think the learning is these deep relationships that allow us to get closer and be more productive and beneficial to consumers. Yeah. I think creating these, you know, standard content plays and expecting everybody to adopt to them because that's what we believe is right. It's just old.
Well, it's interesting. I think the consumer is so educated now and people want to know about the science of things. It gives credibility. And, you know, there's just so many ways to target that. I think especially in the supplement sector, it's interesting to see the pattern of Instagram ads where it's like doctor-based and like, I mean, I think there was like a couple of times where I watched a 45-minute like video and I was like, this is fascinating. And then it's like something. But then you like
learn.
And then
they're trying to sell you something.
Yeah. But then I was like, I learned everything about a microbiome, you know?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, that's the part that I have trouble with. And then I'm trying to sell you something. So I think we have to separate the salaciousness of selling to education. Once we educate you, you choose. You know, I don't want to.
Well, that's the best practice.
I want you to be happy. And the product is good enough that we, 9 times out of 10, you're happy and you feel good and you're okay with the spending. It's expensive and I get it. And I wish it wasn't. You know, I would love to help more people. But the protein is expensive and that's the, right. that's the, just the byproduct of a business. But I don't want to sell everything to everybody. I want you to be happy and feel good. And if that means I'm half the size that it, you know, I should be, then okay, it's all right.
Will you work with different organizations that specialize in hair loss for women? And what about men? We haven't really touched on men.
Oh, who cares?
That's funny.
I mean, listen,
they're losing their hair. They lose their hair.
Yeah. You know, I think we have a lot of male clients and men are starting, you know, we've been saying the men's business is just about to come for like a century. But I think with beards and more consciousness of men and the softer side of men, they actually are caring more about their appearance. Male pattern baldness and female pattern baldness or hair thinning is a very different condition.
Oh, interesting.
You know, the makeup, the physiology is very, very
because
different.
Is it genetic?
Yeah, it's much more complicated, you know.
For a male, more genetic.
Yeah.
And for a female, it's more.
There's more environmental aspects to female.
Really?
Yes, to female pattern thinning.
Wow, heavy conversation.
Yeah. You know what's interesting too, though, if you think about it, like, and this is what we want to get good at, is if you're a vegan or a vegetarian, you're going to have hair challenges. Mm-hmm. If you've had any kind of gastro surgery, you're going to have hair challenges. There's also, if you've got diabetic, you're going to have, there's a way without being opportunistic when, with people's health, there's a way to talk to people that says, listen, you can help this,
Right.
You this is going to happen.
Well, it's like a lifestyle.
Protein, yeah.
It's food. It goes into everything in your life.
That's
not
right. That's right.
Yeah.
And think about your hair in the same context as you think about your body, which is health and wellness. I can actually have a healthier, weller head of hair
right.
if I pay attention to it.
So true.
We have so much work to do. Oh, yeah. My God.
Too much. It's exhausting. I need to lay down.
Well, speaking of which, I think it's exciting.
It is.
So next up, we're going to hear a little bit more about the personal side of Melis with a round of what we call hitting the pan right after this.
Here comes Makeup in Los Angeles, the only and unique B2B makeup event at your doorstep. The next edition, February 11th and 12th in Los Angeles at the LA Convention Center. Makeup in Los Angeles is a unique place where you can find from alpha to omega every piece of a makeup and skincare product and make your own line, advised and guided by the savoir-faire of the most qualified experts in the beauty industry. Whatever your project is, there you can find the best contact. You can ask for an invitation at the show's website, makeup-in-losangeles.com.
And now, it's Hitting the Pan.
Okay, Melis, it's time for Hitting the Pan when we get to the deeper layers of who our guest is to determine the order of who asks the questions. As usual, we give the proverbial salon chair a spin to see who it lands on. And the first question goes to Abby.
So, Melis, you've had such an incredible background, and I am sure you spend so much of your time working. Sounds like 8 days a week, 28 hours a day. I know the drill very, very well. What do you do in your free time fun? How do you let loose and just enjoy life?
I do spend a lot of time working, but I'm somebody that doesn't separate work and life. I think it's all a big blend. That's how I grew up. And I have a little bit inappropriately young children, and they love virtue and they love to talk about it. And so I spend my free time with my kids and my animals, and we ski and travel and hike and, those kinds
You're
of things.
You're outdoorsy. You
Very
love the outdoors.
Yes. I'm dressed like a lumberjack right now, but I just got back from Jackson Hole, so I was skiing for 10 days.
Yeah. And do you have boys or girls?
I have a boy and a girl. And it's interesting because they've grown up around the industry and the business. So they get so excited, when they hear stuff like this and they tell their friends, I'm using virtue. Are you using virtue?
They're proud of their mama. I love it.
Cute. Yeah. So cute. Yeah.
That's great.
All right. Let's do another spin of the salon chair. And it goes to me. So my question for you, Melis, is you mentioned your family history in the beauty industry that goes way back. And aside from hair and hair care products and hairstyling products, I'm curious about what your go-to beauty product is, not in the hair category. The thing you cannot.
Yeah, probably my foundations. You get to a point where you feel naked without your foundation. So I use Hourglass pretty much universally on foundation. But that's the thing, I spend a lot of time being made up, and I don't love it because it's a lot of stuff on my face, and I usually pick the eyelashes off and leave them in someone's coffee or something. So I like just, I'm okay with my age, and I just like the very natural, clean look.
Love that.
Yeah.
Thing. All right. Let's do one more spin of the salon chair, and we are landing on Karen.
So it's kind of exciting that 2020 is not just a new year, but it's a new decade. Right?
So, thank God.
We're all ready for a
feel. We'll feel that way.
Yep.
So let's say it's 12 months from now, or you could choose 12 months from now or by the end of the decade. What are the three most amazing things that happened in your life?
So from a business perspective, I would say, universal acceptance of the product and critical mass. So getting enough people using it where we've earned the right to be where we are. On a personal level, like everybody, I'm looking for a little more joy in my life. For me, the last couple of years, it's been hard. It's been hard to see the emergence of things I thought were dead, you know, the misogyny, the hate, the kind of stuff like that. I think a year from now, I want the world to feel a little nicer, and a little bit more pleasant. I've turned down my level of news, which has been helpful in the last few weeks. I've really knocked it back because really it was affecting my attitude, you know, the talking heads and the seeing all this hate and awfulness. It just brings your head down.
Very damaging.
Yeah, it is damaging. And I think it's almost that kind of thing that you don't even realize that, you know, you're pissed, you know, and as women, you're just like, oh my God, I can't deal with one more Jeffrey Epstein, Harvey Weinstein. It's just enough. It's got to stop. And then, you know, I would like a Yankees World Series in the next 12 months.
Awesome.
A win.
Good luck.
A win.
I hear you. We're all behind you. Yeah.
Good ones. Hey, sky's the limit. So at this point in the show, we have our final thought. So we offer you an opportunity to reflect on our conversation and offer a final thought to listeners.
Yeah, look, it's really lovely being with you guys. And I think the one benefit to sort of the industry changing is new platforms and mediums have evolved that are accessible to brands and businesses and people like me, which years ago it wasn't available because the big companies did the big advertising and, you know, the focus really was there. So it's been delightful. And, you know, I appreciate the thoughtfulness and the questions. And, you know, it's an interesting time to be a CEO and an entrepreneur. You have to put a little bit more out there. Sometimes not that comfortable. It's not, you know, oftentimes I say I don't necessarily like to be the face of the brand or the voice of the brand. But I think in today's day and age, you have to, the one thing we control is what we consume and whom we consume it from and where we consume it. And making sure that the companies and the people who are responsible for that are living a good, honest existence. So I appreciate the format and it's been fun. Thanks.
Fantastic. Thank you. And how can listeners connect with you, Melissa, online, however you
My cell phone.
To be?
Yourself. Put it out there.
You can just say website, whatever. Instagram.
Our website, Instagram, all social media.
And is the handle at Virtue Labs?
It's at virtuelabs.com.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Melissa, for your time and for being here with us. We know that you are extremely busy and you're not local here, so we truly appreciate it. And thank you to everyone for listening. We'll be back next week with another great guest. And thank you so much, Karen, for being here with us too.
See you in the next one.
And thank you, Abby, as well.
Thanks for being here.
I'm April Franzino, and we'll see you next time. Thank you so much.
This has been Beauty is Your Business, produced by Mouth Media Network. Copyright 2020. Keep in touch on Instagram and Facebook at Mouth Media Network. And find prior episodes at beautyisyourbusiness.com. And wherever the best podcasts are found, your brand message can be on this show. Email us to find out more at podcast@mouthmedianetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
This is Mouth Media Network. Amplify and connect.